Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
To you, we're welcome to the Inside Scoop. A happy Friday to you. This is Mark Levine. We are still talking about the aftermath of the Republican debate. It is, of course, the second day afterwards, and that's because it was a very long debate. There's a lot to talk about. If you didn't see it all because you got tired and you went to bed, I don't blame you. It got awfully long. It got awfully tiring, and it was funny, actually, the candidates, you could tell. The lights were very, very hot, and they were all sweaty. No one seemed to enjoy the debate very much. Donald Trump, in the first hour, came out with all his usual bluster and insults and quips, but by the end of the debate, he seemed tired too. So who won? Who lost? What were the issues discussed? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I watched it all so that you don't have to. Yes, you're welcome. We talked about some of it yesterday. We're going to talk a little bit more about it today. Play some clips from it. To me, Carly Fiorina did win the debate. Not that she's that persuasive. Her ideas, some of the things she says, were frankly false. Her claim that she saw some live fetus kicking on a table in a video, just not true. Or the claim that she frankly didn't do bad at Hewlett-Packard, also not true. But she stood firm against Donald Trump's sexism. She stood up to him in a way that, well, none of the men seemed to be able to do. And for that, I think the pundits are right. She did win the debate, even though I don't think she will go very far either. To me, what's most interesting was to see not so much how Donald Trump or Carly Fiorina or the supposedly second-place candidate, Dr. Carson, did. Dr. Carson, by the way, put me to sleep. I mean, really, absolutely boring. It seemed like, talk about low energy, by the way. Ben Carson probably had the lowest energy of it all. No, to me, what was most interesting was the candidate I still predict will win the nomination. I could be wrong, of course. But the candidate I still predict will win the nomination is Jeb Bush, brother and son of a president. It would be the first time, by the way, in American history that three presidents from the same family would be in office. That's never happened before. Jeb still strikes me as someone who will win the nomination because I think Trump will flame out. I just can't see Carly Fiorina or Ben Carson taking his place. And yet he was so weak last night. But the only powerful thing he did was attack Donald Trump over casinos. We'll get to that in just a second. But first of all, let's just play what I think Jeb would think was his best moment and talk about why it really wasn't that strong. This is when Donald Trump pointed out that America did not feel very safe under his brother, George W. Bush. This is the first clip that we have for you. And in this clip, he gets a big ovation. But I don't think the people in that room, the people in the Ronald Reagan Library, represent America as a whole. Let's play that clip.
Here's the fact. When Donald Trump talks about judgment, what was his position on who would have been the best negotiator to deal with Iran? It wasn't a Republican. It was Hillary Clinton. That's what you believe. I mean, the lack of judgment and the lack of understanding about how the world works is really dangerous in this kind of time that we're saying. So is that the judgment that
you bring to the table,
that Hillary Clinton is a great negotiator, that she could bring about a better
deal with Iran? Your brother's administration gave us Barack Obama because it was such a disaster those last 3 months that Abraham Lincoln couldn't have been elected.
You know what? As it relates to my brother, there's one thing I know for sure. He kept us safe. I don't know if you remember, Donald. You remember the rubble? You remember the firefighter with his arms around it? He sent a clear signal that the United States would be strong and fight Islamic terrorism, and he did keep us safe.
I don't know, you feel safe right now? I don't feel so safe.
So that was an audience, no question, that was a pro-establishment, pro-Jeb Bush audience. It's the ones that would be on the mailing list of the Reagan Library. You can't get more establishment than that. These are the big donors. These are the people who care about Ronald Reagan's legacy. These are hardly the outsiders, the angry conservatives that Donald Trump supports. At the Fox gathering, anyone could come in. They had a massive room, and that had a large group of people, including the angry conservatives that I call Trumplicans. This was the establishment. So Donald Trump made a pretty good joke, I mean, particularly by Donald Trump's standards, saying Abraham Lincoln couldn't get elected, fell flat. And then Jeb Bush said something extraordinary. He said, George Bush kept us safe. And then when asked for the example of keeping us safe, because I don't think any of us have forgotten that the largest terrorist attack in American history occurred under George Bush's watch, September 11, 2001, that wasn't when Clinton was president, it wasn't when Obama was president, and it occurred months after the Clinton administration had warned Bush to look out for it, after Condoleezza Rice had gotten a memo saying bin Laden determined to attack the United States, and they decided not to work on it. They were working on splitting up Iraq instead. So Jeb Bush's example was, well, don't you remember George W. Bush put his arm around a firefighter? Well, golly gee, President Bush, thank you for putting your arm around a firefighter. The firefighters were indeed the heroes of September 11th. In fact, the Republican Party to this day is not funding the illnesses that the firefighters received, those that lived through September 11th, when they fought through the rubble and the horrific pollution, air pollution, of that day, when at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And they went through, and to this day, they have lung disease, they're dying early. Democrats have tried to help the 9/11 first responders with their medical care. Republicans, well, they like to put their arms around these firefighters, but they don't really care enough about saving their lives. They want them to save the lives of others. They don't give a damn about their own life. So George Bush put his arm around a firefighter. Well, way to go, Mr. President. You didn't stop the attack. You didn't even help the first responders after the attack. But apparently that's supposed to make us feel safe, even though you then sent us into a war in Iraq, that lost more lives, more American service member lives, than all the innocent people murdered on September 11th. 3,000 died in New York and outside Washington, D.C., and more than 4,000 were killed in Iraq. Not Afghanistan, not in the place for the people that attacked us, but in Iraq. Tens of thousands wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead. And now we have a Middle East crisis, where Iraq is weak and Iran is strong because Saddam Hussein was a bulwark against Iran. And we basically had to deal with that strength by doing a deal that, well, I've reluctantly come to support because there's no other deal in sight. But to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons, Barack Obama is basically letting them walk through the Middle East. ISIS is more powerful. And I don't know that the Iraqi war made us safe. I don't think it made us safe at all. If anything, it made us more unsafe. And it had nothing to do with September 11th. And that's what got Jeb Bush the biggest applause line. Everything else, he was weak. So if that's his biggest applause line, If that's the biggest thing he can claim, that George Bush made us safe, that George Bush made us safe, killing more Americans than were murdered on September 11th in a useless war, fought supposedly over weapons of mass destruction that we now know just weren't there and were never there, and transformed the Middle East into a stable, dangerous place, to an unstable, more dangerous place, and gave our enemies like Iran even more power. I don't know, Jeb. If that's the issue you're going to run on, you may well win the Republican nomination, because there are some benighted Republicans to believe all that. But I'll tell you this, the Trumplicans don't believe that, and the Democrats don't believe that, and the independents don't believe that. Jeb Bush, if you're going to be the Republican nominee, and something makes me still think you are, that's a very, very weak argument. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I want to play more of the exchange between George W. Bush and Donald Trump to show, I don't know, how weak Jeb Bush is in this race. Even his one main hit against Donald Trump didn't land very well. We'll be playing it when we get back right after this. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the Republican debate. If you didn't see all 3 hours, it actually was longer than 3 hours, by the way. It went on to 3 hours and, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or so. If you didn't see the entire debate, I don't blame you. It's interesting. It was a very popular show. CNN got terrific ratings. But I have a feeling that the viewership basically dragged as the night wore on. Wouldn't be surprised if we see, and I haven't seen these figures, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see that the figures of people watching, well, they got bored after a while. The first hour was entertaining, lots of attack and counterattack, but even Donald Trump seemed bored by the end of it all. One of the best moments, one of the memorable moments of the debate was when Donald Trump and Jeb Bush went at it. Jeb Bush, by the way, had a valid point about Donald Trump, specifically about Donald Trump trying to get casinos down in Florida. A very important point, one that actually I hadn't known before. But as usual, the zinger that Donald Trump gave to Jeb Bush, well, that got a little more attention than perhaps than the rest of the discussion. Let's play that zinger now. It's clip number four between Donald Trump and Jeb Bush.
One of the reasons Mr. Trump is a front runner, Republican voters say, is because they like the fact that he is not bought and paid for by wealthy donors. Mr. Trump has repeatedly said that the $100 million you've raised for your campaign makes you a puppet for your donors. Are you?
No, absolutely not. People are supporting me because I have a proven record of conservative leadership, where I cut taxes $19 billion over 8 years. We shrunk the state government workforce. We created a climate that led the nation in job growth 7 out of 8 years. We were one of two states to go to AAA bond rating. People know that we need principle-centered leadership, a disruptor to go to Washington, D.C. The one guy that had some special interest that I know of that tried to get me to change my views on something that was generous and gave me money was Donald Trump. He wanted casino gambling in Florida.
I didn't want it.
Yes, you did.
Totally false.
You wanted it, and you didn't get it.
I was
opposed to casino gambling
before, during, and after.
And that's not, I'm not going to be bought by anybody.
I promise, if I wanted it, I would have gotten it.
No way, man.
Believe me.
Nope.
I know my people.
Not even possible.
I know my people.
Is there anything else you want to say about this?
No, I just will tell you that, you know, Jeb made the statement. I'm not only referring to him. A lot of money was raised by a lot of different people that are standing up here. And the donors, the special interests, the lobbyists have very strong power over these people. I'm spending all of my money. I turned down so much. I could have right now from special interests and donors, I could have double and triple what he's got. I've turned it down. I've turned down last week $5 million from somebody. So I will tell you, I understand the game. I've been on the other side all of my life, and they have a lot of control over our politicians. And I don't say that favorably, and I'm not sure if there's another system, but I say this, I am not accepting any money from anybody. Nobody has control of me other than the people of this country.
Governor,
I'm
going to
do the right thing.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump actually has a point there, and that is that most politicians rely on billionaires' money, particularly in the system we have, the post-Citizens United world in which we live. They have to rely on that money, and he doesn't, and he isn't bought by special interests. It's actually a fair point Donald Trump makes. But the point that Jeb Bush was making, that got lost because Jeb Bush really didn't strongly advocate for it, was that Donald Trump works on both sides of that equation. That he's someone who did pay because he wanted casinos in Florida. And he paid off politicians the way billionaires always pay off politicians because he wanted a casino in Florida and he didn't get it. And Donald Trump said, that's not true, but it was true. It's entirely true. And sometimes I think it's the role of the press to fact check these things. What will be most remembered, though, was, of course, the zinger, what occurred right after that. Let's play that clip. It's the four. I think you just played 14. It's clip four. Maybe play the other one.
But I say this, I am not accepting any money from anybody. Nobody has control of me other than the people of this country.
Governor,
I'm
going to
do the right thing.
You got, according to to what you said on one of the talk shows, you got Hillary Clinton to go to your wedding.
That's
because
true.
You gave her
That's
money.
True.
Maybe it works for Hillary Clinton.
It doesn't work for anybody on this stage. I was a businessman. I got along with Clinton. I got along with everybody.
Yeah.
That was my job, to get along with people.
But the simple
Excuse me. One second.
No.
Donald, you cannot take... More energy tonight. I like that. Look.
I was asked the question.
I didn't want... It was my obligation as a businessman to my family, to my company, to my employees, to get along with all politicians. I got along with all of them. And I did a damn good job in doing it. Go ahead.
So there you go.
Right? I mean, that's the clip that's going to be remembered. Oh, you got more energy tonight. And Donald Trump is ready, and he's prepared for all of these things. But what's fascinating about it is that Donald Trump is actually telling the truth. It's something that I think people appreciate. Do billionaires pay off politicians to get their way? Damn right they do. The Democrats have been saying that. But the American people know it, too. Independents know it, too. Trumplicans know it, too. Donald Trump knows it. Jeb Bush knows it. And so when Donald Trump says it's true and Jeb Bush says it's false, well, there you go. That's something that people recognize as a truth. The irony is that Donald Trump has been on both sides of that equation, right? He's complaining about the system that he himself admits he participated in. Did he try to buy off politicians? Of course he did. That's what billionaires do. Bribery is legal in America. And frankly, if you don't want bribery to be legal in America, the correct answer is not to vote for Donald Trump, a person who tried to give the bribes, or for Jeb Bush and the other Republicans who received the bribes. You got to vote for the Democratic Party that wants to end the system of having big money control who wins our elections. This is Mark Levine. We'll be playing more on the other side of the break, talk about a few of the other candidates. And one of the things I found most interesting, the exchange over drugs, over marijuana. And, Jeb Bush's admission that he partake a little himself. We'll be right back with it right after this. Mark Levine. We will be back at the Center for American Progress on Monday, complete with our fantastic sound there. Looking forward to that. The studio is a new one. It's been renovated. It'll be very nice for you. Still got me, though, back here in Alexandria, Virginia, for another half hour. Hope you're having a really good Friday. We're talking about the Republican debate, if you didn't see it all, I don't blame you. It got to be very long. One of the most memorable moments, I thought, in the debate, because, well, it touched a little bit, just a little bit, on Black Lives Matter. It really didn't, because these candidates don't like to talk about race very much. But they did talk about, well, at least Rand Paul talked about, the unevenness of the drug war. Listen to this exchange on marijuana legalization. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Governor Christie recently said, quote, "If you're getting high in Colorado today, where marijuana has been legalized, enjoy it until January 2017, because I will enforce the federal laws against marijuana. Will you?"
I think one of the great problems and what the American people don't like about politics is hypocrisy. People who have one standard for others and not for themselves. There's at least one prominent example on the stage of someone who says they smoked pot in high school. And yet the people who are going to jail for this are poor people, often African Americans and often Hispanics, and yet the rich kids who use drugs aren't. I personally think that this is a crime for which the only victim is the individual. And I think that America has to take a different attitude. I'd like to see more rehabilitation and less incarceration. I'm a fan of the drug courts, which try to direct you back towards work and less time in jail. But the bottom line is the states. We say we like the 10th Amendment until we start talking about this. And I think the federal government's gone too far. I think that the war on drugs has had a racial outcome and really has been something that's really damaged our inner cities. Not only do the drugs damage them, we damage them again by incarcerating them and then preventing them from getting employment over time. So I don't think that the federal government should override the states. I believe in the 10th Amendment, and I really will say that the states are left to themselves.
I want to give the person that you called a hypocrite an opportunity to respond. Do you want to identify that person?
Well, I think if we left it open, we could see how many people smoked pot in high school.
Is there somebody you were specifically thinking of?
Well, you know, the thing is
he was talking about me.
Yeah, I was talking
about... That's what I thought, but
I wanted to make it easier for him,
yeah.
Okay.
And I just did.
Governor Bush, please.
So 40 years ago, I smoked marijuana, and I admit it. I'm sure that other people might have done it and may not want to say it in front of 25 million people. My mom's not happy that I just did. That's true. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. We have a serious epidemic of drugs that goes way beyond marijuana. What goes on in Colorado, as far as I'm concerned, that should be a state decision. But if you look at the problem of drugs in this society today, it's a serious problem. Rand, you know this because you're campaigning in New Hampshire like all of us, and you see the epidemic of heroin, the overdoses of heroin that's taking place. People's families are being torn apart. It is appropriate for the government to play a consistent role to be able to provide more treatment, more prevention. We're the state that has the most drug courts. Across every circuit in Florida, there are drug courts to give people a second chance. That's the best way to do this.
But let me respond. The thing is that in Florida, Governor Bush campaigned against medical marijuana. That means that a small child like Morgan Hintz that has 500 seizures a day is failing on 9 traditional medications, is not allowed to use cannabis oil, and that if they attempt to do that in Florida, they will take the child away, they will put the parents in jail, and that's what that means. If you're against allowing people to use medical marijuana, you'll actually put them in jail.
Rand,
and actually, under the current
circumstances,
kids who had privilege like you do don't go to jail, but the poor kids in our inner cities go to jail. I don't think that's fair, and I think that we need to acknowledge it, and it is hypocritical to still want to put poor people in jail.
I don't want to put poor people in jail, Rand.
Well,
Here's the deal. You oppose medical marijuana? No, I did not oppose when the legislature passed the bill to deal with that very issue. That's the way to solve this problem. Medical marijuana on the ballot was opened up. There's a huge loophole. It was the first step towards getting to a Colorado place. And as a citizen of Florida, I voted no.
So that was a very interesting exchange. And listen, I think Rand Paul is wrong on a number of issues, no question about it. But on decriminalization, even legalization of marijuana, I think he's dead on. And I say this, and we've done shows about this, I say this as someone who, frankly, unlike Jeb Bush, has never tried the drug. I personally don't like marijuana very much. I don't like cigarettes very much. I don't like people smoking around me and giving me a sore throat, making my eyes water, making my clothes and my hair smell. So I'm not a fan of smoking anything personally. But I would legalize it because putting people in jail doesn't solve the problem. And as Rand Paul so deftly points out, poor people are put in jail black people are put in jail. Rich white people like Jeb Bush are not put in jail. They could say to a broad audience, embarrassing his mother, yeah, I smoked marijuana 40 years ago. Yeah, but you didn't go to jail for it, Jeb. You didn't go to jail for it. You didn't lose a job because of it. You did not get hired because of it. You were a rich white kid. You got away with it. And let's face it, tens of millions, probably hundreds of millions, I don't know, certainly tens of millions of Americans have smoked marijuana and gotten away with it. But poor people don't. And black people don't. And poor black people absolutely don't. And this drug war is devastating their community. And even though they didn't talk about Black Lives Matter at all, this was the closest they got to it. And Jeb Bush just didn't get it. Medical marijuana is not enough. It is never fair to have a law that is unequally applied. And our drug laws couldn't be more unequally applied. And frankly, if they wanted to equally apply them, they'd have to put tens of millions of white, middle-class, and upper-middle-class teenagers in jail. And I don't think anyone wants to do that. So our drug war is specifically an opportunity to take the most vulnerable among us and to make them even more vulnerable. They make absolutely no sense. That was a really strong point by Rand Paul. One thing, though, that nobody really pointed out, except a little bit of Chris Christie on the stage, is that marijuana is a federal law. Shouldn't be, but it is. And it trumps the state laws. 10th Amendment notwithstanding, the reason it trumps the state laws, by the way, and no one talks about this, is because Antonin Scalia felt that even if you grow marijuana in your own yard, that has an effect on interstate commerce. The same Justice Scalia that said that health care, which is 1/6 of the nation's economy, has zero effect across state lines, even though virtually every medical equipment is sold across state lines and every pill is sold across state lines, that didn't count, Scalia said. But if you grow marijuana in your own use, for your own use, you might be less inclined to buy it across the border. So because of Scalia's craziness, because he doesn't know how to follow the Constitution or read the Constitution, that's the reason why we even have this as an issue. How's that for something people don't talk about? When we come back, I want to play more of the exchanges between the candidates, particularly on the issues of immigration, because that's, I think, the biggest difference among the Republicans in this race. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back right after this. Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a little bit more time to talk about the Republican debate. If you want to talk about it more with me, then give us a call on Monday. I want to play just a few remaining clips because immigration has always been the big issue in this campaign. It's the issue that brought Donald Trump to the front when he made his comment about all the Mexican immigrants being rapists and drug dealers. That actually is what helped him catch fire and help move his poll numbers from 3% to 30%. Before even the main debate, though, there was an exchange between Senator Rick Santorum and Senator Lindsey Graham that I think well illustrates the divide in the Republican Party on the issue of immigration, frankly, even more so than Donald Trump, who's pretty squirrely and says all kinds of things. So just because to show that we haven't forgotten those at the kiddie table, let's play this interesting exchange between Rick Santorum and Lindsey Graham.
We'll come back to you, Senator Santorum, I promise.
He mentioned my name and that I didn't have a plan. And the fact of the matter is that I did have a plan. Back in 2006, I introduced a plan called a Comprehensive Border Security Bill, which did, in fact, put the resources to build the fencing and deploy the troops and the technology necessary.
What did you do with the 11 million?
As you know, Lindsey,
what are you going to do with the 11 million?
As you know, 40 to 60% of the 11 million are here on visa overstays. We know exactly who they are. We should know where they are. But we have a government that doesn't tell them to return home. You can solve half of the problem with the 11 million by simply telling the 11 million that they have to return to their country of origin. So that's half your problem.
How many Democrats supported your plan? How many Democrats did you have on your bill?
I don't know how many Democrats I had on my bill.
I can tell you none.
But the point is that I had a bill, And
that
I
went nowhere.
Well, you're right, Lindsay. It went nowhere because we had a president back then who was for more comprehensive immigration reform.
George
than I
W.
was.
Bush.
That's right.
Who won with Hispanics?
You know what we need to
compared
do,
to
Lindsay,
what we're
is
doing.
We need to win. We need to win fighting for Americans. We need to win fighting for the workers
Hispanics
in this country who are hurting, including
are
Hispanics.
Americans.
The people who are hurt the most by illegal immigration are Hispanics.
In my world, Hispanics are Americans.
The folks who are hurt the worst are recent immigrants. By illegal immigrants coming to this country, last year alone, 700,000 illegal immigrants came into this country. Who do you think are most impacted? It's the folks who came into this country, played by the rules, did what they were supposed to do, came here and went to work, and now they're finding themselves out of work because someone illegally is willing to come in and work for less.
I have a little different take on where the country is going on this issue. Number one, in 1950, there were 16 workers for every retiree. How many are there today? There's three. In 20 years, there's going to be two. And you're going to have 80 million baby boomers like me retire en masse wanting a Social Security check and the Medicare bills paid. We're going to need more legal immigration. Let's just make it logical. Let's pick people from all over the world on our terms, not just somebody from Mexico. Let's create a rational legal immigration system because we have a declining workforce.
Thank you, Senator.
Strom Thurmond had four kids after he's 67. If you're not willing to do that, we better come up with a new legal immigration system.
Thank you, Senator.
So that's a really good line. But let's unpack this discussion because it is an important one. I hope you understood who was speaking. So Santorum was the one who apparently had a bill, a great plan to solve the immigration problem. Now, Santorum's right about one thing, and this part isn't talked about very much, the fact that 40% of all undocumented immigrants in America, they didn't cross over the southern border. They're not Mexican. They came on visas. Student visas, tourist visas, and they overstayed their visa. Let's not forget that the people who did the murders on September 11th arrived on student visas, and I don't even think they overstayed their visa. I think they were legal immigrants. Not quite sure about that. Maybe a couple overstayed. The point is this. That's 40% of the problem. Santorum is right about that. But then he says we should have just told them to go. Just sent them a letter. Dear overstayed visa person, please leave. Sincerely yours, President Obama. And then Santorum thinks they're all going to go. Basically, he's offering the same thing that Mitt Romney offered 4 years ago, self-deportation. Well, that was laughed out, and this should be laughed out too. The reason people are staying is because they don't want to go back to where they came from. They want to live the American dream. They want to escape religious or political persecution. They want to escape poverty. They want to do well here. That's why they're here. So self-deportation will not work. And then Lindsey Graham says, well, what about the other 60% of the 11 million people? The point that almost no one brings up, by the way, is that 90% of them have been here 5 years or more. And more than 60% have been here 10 years or more. So these aren't exactly people who've just arrived across the border with their backs wet from the Rio Grande River, as some would have us think. These are people who've been here for years, have families here, have established lives here. So Lindsey Graham is saying basically he supported the comprehensive immigration reform bill, the one that Democrats and Republicans both supported. He points out that Santorum had no Democratic support for his bill. But more importantly, he says politically, Republicans need this. They need this because the largest minority in the United States is not African Americans anymore. It's Hispanic Americans. I would call them Latinos. Republicans call them Hispanics. They haven't quite learned yet that you should let people call themselves what they want to call themselves. But okay, Hispanics. So then Santorum makes a classic error. He shows his id. He shows his Freudian slip. He says, we shouldn't do things for Hispanics. We should do things for Americans. Well, as Lindsey Graham points out, Hispanics are Americans. And that's the lesson the Republicans have yet to learn. It's why Donald Trump may get 30%, maybe even 50%. He might even win the Republican nomination, though, again, I really don't think so. I think Jeb Bush is going to win. But if so, he won't win. This argument will not win a majority of the American people. I want to play the discussion on immigration between Donald Trump, that Donald Trump said, because he gets a fact very importantly wrong, and this is from the main debate. Let's play that clip now.
About it in 2008. We talked about it in 2004. We have been talking about it for 25 years. This is why people are tired of politicians.
Ms. Fiorina, we're going to come to you. I just want to get Governor Bush a chance to respond to what Mr. Trump said.
Look, first of all, I wrote a book about this 4 years ago now. And I laid out a comprehensive conservative approach for immigration reform. And it does require securing the border. No one disagrees with that. But to build a wall and to deport people 500,000 a month would cost hundreds of billions of dollars, Donald. Hundreds of billions of dollars. It would destroy community life. It would tear families apart. And it would send the signal to the rest of the world that the United States values that are so important for our long-term success no longer matter in this country.
As I said, we are spending $200 billion. We are spending $200 billion a year on maintaining what we have. We will move them out. The great ones will come back. The good ones will come back. They'll be expedited. They'll be back. They'll come back legally. We'll have a country. They'll come back legally.
Okay, on that note, you have criticized.
So this is important because this is a claim that's been thrown around a lot. Donald Trump's claim that the undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants, cost us $200 billion a year. Well, where does he come up with that? Well, nowhere. Not even the right wing claims that. In fact, the most anti-immigrant group in the country, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the group that spends all of their days and all of their money lobbying for less immigrants, the most nativist organization in America, they claim that the net cost of illegal immigration is $99 billion a year, or half what Donald Trump claims. But of course, that's not true either. In fact, if you look at a report by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan group that both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, cite, they actually think that the undocumented immigrants boost economic input, they boost tax returns, and they save us money. And deporting them costs money. You can't really dispute that. The average cost of deporting a single individual in America is $12,500. Multiply that times 11 million, and we now deport the easiest ones to deport. If you want to deport everyone 11 million, that last few immigrants, they're going to be hard to find. You're going to have to be looking into a lot of hidden places. I don't know if you'd have to go into looking behind bookshelves and in dark, but to try to get every one of them, it'll be substantially more. But let's just take 12,500 and multiply it times 11 million, and we get $137 billion. That's the cost. That would be the cost of deporting every single one if it were possible, and I don't think it is, at almost any price. But the legislation that Republicans and Democrats have proposed, bipartisan legislation to have immigration reform, according to the same Congressional Budget Office study, they said it would increase economic output by 3.3% in the next 10 years and by 5.4% in the next 20 years and would decrease federal budget estimates by $200 billion, to be specific, $197 billion in the next 10 years and $700 billion in the next 20 years. In other words, you may want to deport all the immigrants you can out of America, all the undocumented immigrants you can. You can want that, but it will cost America money, not save us money. If you don't believe that, well, you just haven't studied the figures. It was an interesting debate. We had a lot of people complain about the obsession with Donald Trump. George Pataki did that in the very first debate. Marco Rubio seemed reasonable and was definitely not listened to very much. I still think he would be a strong Republican candidate. I'm glad he's not doing very well. Ben Carson, the so-called opponent to Donald Trump, he seemed to be asleep the entire time. And they're debating things that most Americans have already decided on. The question of birthright citizenship was decided by the 14th Amendment after the Civil War. It's been the law by the United States Supreme Court for more than 100 years. You have, with the Trumplicans, they're opening up old debates that Americans have long since passed. And that tells you something about today's Republican Party. It's a Republican Party that is all too quick to go to the past, a past where gay people couldn't marry, a past where Mexicans were not as strong. Of course, they were always strong immigrants in America. Democrats have always been about the future, and it's why I think they're going to win the presidential race in 2016. This is Mark Levine. I'll talk to you next Monday.